I'm Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. Hey everybody, Jason Klom here. I have a number of regular episodes in the can, but because of a number of other projects kind of getting in the way, and as you can probably hear, I'm super sick right now, I'm going to release this week the first in a series of compilations from my Comedy Album A Day video series that I'm doing at YouTube. Or on YouTube. You go to youtube.com/comedyonvinyl, or if you want to go straight to the playlist, it's bit.ly/comedyalbumaday. For all of 2017, I'm doing just that, listening to a comedy album a day. I am, again, playing catch up on that as well, but the first 10 here, I'm just going to compile them one back to back from the other. That doesn't make any sense. I'm going to compile them all back to back. So it's the first 10 episodes, probably run about 45 minutes or so, and it's just me reviewing these albums one by one. I hope you enjoy those. You know, if in the last 6 years of this podcast, you heard me hopefully evolve as an interviewer, this is the beginning of me evolving as a me in the camera critic. I don't like even, they're just reviews. It's just like, how much fun did I have listening to this thing? How boring was it? How interesting was it? And some of these are pretty easy to find online. So if you want to buy them yourself for some reason, if you can't find them, let me know. Might be able to help you find them. So that'll be about it. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoy Comedy Album A Day. Everybody, Jason Klom here with the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. I'm listening to one comedy album a day through all of 2017 to get through my collection. Firesign Theater's archivist Taylor Jessen suggested I listen to Pat Buttram's As I Look Into Your Faces, which, believe me, need looking into. I had it in my collection. I love Pat Buttram. Great actor. You might know him best from Back to the Future 3, but he had a huge career in Westerns before that and as Mr. Haney on Green Acres. He's the toastmaster here at various events for people like Steve Allen, etc. And there's a lot of deep cuts. You have to know a lot about these people to kind of understand why these boilerplate jokes work for them, but through context you can figure it out. I don't specifically know a whole lot about who George Jessel likes to date, but it's obvious he liked to date younger women through this. Interesting, Pat Buttram only breaks into the Pat Buttram voice like that once. The rest of it's just him doing his regular voice. It's fun to listen to. I don't know if you're going to go out of your way to buy it necessarily, because it is very dated, but it was fun to listen to. It wasn't a waste of my time. Thank you guys, and hashtag comedy album a day. Hey everybody, Jason Klom of the Comedy on Vinyl podcast, day two of my 365 comedy albums in 2017. I'm hashtagging it comedy album a day. I'm listening to one usually that I haven't heard before. I'm going to be listening to some that I've heard before to give them just a fresh listen, and based on new recommendations, if somebody else recommends it, might as well listen to it again if they've got a good reason. The one that I'm going to listen, that I listened to already today is, Ill Will by Will Jordan. It's from 1961. Just real quick thing, this is going to go longer than my last one. Instagram only lets you do a minute. If you want to see the rest of this, go to YouTube. I'm going to put these up on YouTube as well. Will Jordan is best known for inventing the voice and personality and impression that we know as Ed Sullivan. And he does it briefly on this album. This is his stand-up that is filled not just with impressions, although there's plenty of those, but also voices. He's in the group of what they like to call sick comics at the time. He's got a bit of a dark sense of humor, or at the very least a much darker than what you would have heard at the time. And very funny stuff. There are a few things that, would be a little more, people nowadays would be more sensitive to. And that includes myself. I try to have a little bit of context. That's one of the interesting things about listening to albums like this is I have to go out of my way to straddle this line between people like myself who'd normally be, some people consider too sensitive or too PC, which is really, I mean, that's, you think about that what you like. I have to straddle the line between that and just completely excusing anything that's, offensive as, that's how it was in the day, and they didn't mean it this way, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You have to straddle the line, because you have to be intelligent about it. I enjoy the album, despite some of the things that are racist. Those things happen. There are a few things that are interesting where, he'll play with a voice that's meant to be based on another stereotype. So it's like, this is how the Japanese in World War II were portrayed in films, but there's still
you can hear that some of the laughs are coming from a different place in the audience. That's not to say that's all this album is. That happens to be one bit. The album is very funny. It's very situational in that, you know, to set up a voice, you can hear the glee in his voice when he's setting up a bit to do a voice. I mean, that's what you do if you're a mimic. He's a well-known mimic, best known, again, for inventing Ed Sullivan, practically. Really big shoe was him. People don't know that, for the most part. People just assume that's how everybody did it. Well, everybody did it because of Will Jordan. There's a lot of really funny stuff on here, and it's definitely worth listening to. If you're a modern day listener, somebody who might be more sensitive like I am, just be prepared that there's stuff in there that you're not necessarily going to immediately like. Maybe don't turn it off, of course, if it's not something you enjoy instantly. Just understand the context of it, and you don't need to excuse it. You know, if it's something that offends you. And I apologize, I don't mean to make this whole thing about just that aspect of this album. It's brief. There are only a couple things that I would say are like that. And it is of its time, but we're going to run into that a lot with these albums. I'm not going to talk about it every single time, but it is important to bring it up on just day two. There's going to be some stuff that's, you have to cross that generational gap on your own, and, you know, beware that there be dragons ahead. I've lost the metaphor completely. That said, by Will Jordan is fun. It's a lot of fun to listen to. His style of a patter is similar to, like, a Lenny Bruce, and he makes me think of what Lenny Bruce would have been if he'd have stuck with just doing voices and stand-up, and it didn't become its own thing. It's very strong. The voice is very strong. It's also very conversational. It's very snappy and very fast. It does give me a little, there are little hints of, like, Jonathan Winters or Robin Williams, that kind of thing. Where there's a lot of what sounds like quick thinking, and I don't know his process, so I don't know if there was much improv. But either way, it sounds very, very, very off the cuff, even in the stuff that's clearly very well planned. I really like it. The liner notes, not really liner notes, it's the back, written by Hugh Hefner, who a lot of people don't realize was so instrumental in bringing comedians to the forefront of pop culture. In a new way, and giving them a big platform. Anyway, it's fun. It's worth listening to. And honestly, if you want to listen to it since it's out of print, go to taylorjessen.blogspot.com. I own this record, but I did not have time to rip it myself. You know who's done that and cleaned it up for you, including cleaned up this art? I've got a torn record here. Taylor Jessen, who is Fireside Theater's archivist, but if you go to Fuji Puzzle Box, his blog, he has done some amazing things where he cleans up albums that deserve it, or at least of pop culture interest and importance. So if you go there, you can get this. You can get the cleaned up art. It's more than worth it. You could spend days, and I have done, going through his entire archive. And some of the stuff that I'm going to be talking about through the rest of the year is going to come from his blog, especially some more obscure stuff and interesting stuff like, for instance, Steve Martin breaking down his own albums. People don't think he ever really did that on in an audio format, but he really did. So enjoy that. Go to Taylor's blog. Thank you guys for watching, and have a good thing. And please, hashtag anything related to this, Comedy Album a Day. Thanks so much. Everybody, Jason Klom with the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. I am doing one comedy album a day. That is to say, I'm listening to one comedy album a day for all of 2017. So I'm hashtagging it Comedy Album a Day to help spread the word about it. You should do it too, actually. You know, go ahead, do it. Send them to me. I want to know what people are listening to. I might just do the album you do because it helps me choose. Although most of the point of this is to get through the shitload of comedy albums that I have. Just to listen to them. This time I have picked, so when I was in Kalamazoo, Michigan for a wedding a few months back, I went to Satellite Records, which is an amazing record shop. I'm sure it's great for people who like music. I mean, I like music, but for people who are hunting for obscure and interesting music. But I found some awesome comedy stuff, as well as some like local comedy stuff and some more obscure comedy stuff that I probably wouldn't find anywhere. Now that said, the person I'm picking is very popular in a world that's not something I'm familiar with or used to. This is Wendy Bagwell, this, that, and the other. And look closely, the most unusual thing that struck me first is that it's a gentleman named Wendy. Now, I've never seen that before. That's interesting, number one. He was a gospel singer, but this is a collection of his comedy bits that he would do in between songs. And actually, you'll hear a lot of the intros and outros. It's either he's just come out of a song or he's just going into a song. The interesting thing, the reason, like I say, he's bigger in a world than I'm familiar with. I don't know much about gospel music or comedy that might be in that world. One of his stories, which is on here, it's called Here Come the Rattlesnakes. I've seen it listed. That's how it's listed. Didn't mention this album's from 1970. That's fun. There's a siren. That is a million-selling single, Here Come the Rattlesnakes. Okay? That's how big it was. This is, again, I'm going off of Wikipedia, and, you know, citation needed maybe, but it does seem to... He was big! And it's fascinating, and it's interesting. Now, when you listen to it, it's the first word that comes to mind if you are a city slicker, a bit of a city mouse like myself. I come from the country. It's very quaint. That's the first word that you hear. It's like a not honed, maybe a less sophisticated, I don't mean that in a derogatory sense, version of an Andy Griffith. It's a country bumpkin, and he calls himself a bumpkin, or some word equivalent to that. And it's just his stories of life. He stammers a bit like Senator Claghorn on the old Jack Benny show, or Foghorn Leghorn. He uses the word honey a lot. Honey, I tell you. And it's a joy to listen to him tell a story, even if I'm not laughing. And if I'm honest, like as far as like my style of humor, I don't really laugh that much on it. It is very much like, this is for a church audience. This is people who would be listening to, I like gospel music, fine, but people who would be listening to it would also be comfortable hearing these songs in between songs about Jesus Christ. He talks about the Lord a lot, unabashedly, which is fine. I don't judge that at all, of course. But it is interesting to hear that in a mix of comedy. And when you hear, typically if you hear somebody that's like mixing faith with their art, this is the kind of stuff you have to do. It's going to be safe. That's going to be what it's like. You know, there are a few things that are of the time. Like I say, it's 1970. This cover looks older. His hair definitely looks older than that. And his style of telling stories and the sort of type of bumpkin he's portraying, which does actually seem very legitimate and it's very sweet, is a little old-timey. So there are a few things where it's like, you know, he's being self-deprecating, but there's some times when it just comes across as it's a less sophisticated version of self-deprecating and kind of playing up the character of who you are and where you're from. Again, it's Andy Griffith without the work behind it. This is a guy just telling stories between music, and clearly it is released on Canaan Records, or Canaan, I'm so sorry, I'm assuming it's Canaan Records. They did gospel recordings. So they're like, hey, you know, you tell all these stories, let's do something with them, especially after Here Come the Rattlesnakes does so well. The stories are interesting, okay? They're well-told stories, and they're very country, and they're very American. They're super American, the way they're told. I was thinking about what is different about this than what I'm used to hearing. Comedians tend to be people who want to be people of the world no matter where they're from. That is the reason why if you're from a small town, even if you're a local comedian, a lot of people travel, and they want to be worldly. That is a thing about comedians. This is a guy who was clearly comfortable in his own world, made money in his own world, sold a million copies of a record in his own world. So his form of storytelling is very, very country and very American in that way. It's very unique. It can't be very unique. It's unique. It's its own thing. And that is the most interesting part about it. And if you listen to it, if it were me, if I'm going to recommend what to listen to, I'd say listen to Side 2. Here Come the Rattlesnakes is fine, but Side 2 is pretty interesting. But before you get there, if you read up on him, he's interesting. He's a decorated Marine. He adopted his abused nephew to help save him. Like a really fascinating, interesting guy. And that will soften your heart a little bit if you're maybe bored, or it's not your style, or one or two things might seem sexist. It's honestly, for 1970... it's pretty tame compared to other stuff, because he's a guy who clearly is passionate about his faith, and so being nice is behind everything he does, so I actually respect that. The best story on here is called Picking Up Pawpaws, and it's really sweet. It's really genuine. It's vulnerable. And there's this guy who, you know, he's not super masculine or anything, but he is, he's a religious guy. He's got to portray a certain image. And to talk about being vulnerable and being in, cast in his first play and being so excited, it's just as much, it's as good or interesting a story as you've ever heard of anybody going into entertainment for the first time. It's adorable. And it's sweet. It's well told. All the characters are well laid out. I like it a lot. So I think it's worth looking for. I'm sure you can find this stuff on YouTube. I have zero idea if this is out of print or not. Again, I got this for $2 at Satellite Records in Kalamazoo. And I don't know. I think it's fun to listen to. There's some weird, interesting, I don't know, just some weird things going on technically that I don't know how they happen. There are two tracks that are clearly from the same show where the audience sounds like an old-timey radio sound of a storm. Like, you can hear it's kind of people laughing, but it sounds like as he's talking. It's one of the weirdest things I've heard. What I'm guessing is, it was an old-timey mic, maybe a diaphragm mic that didn't pick up the audience. They didn't mic the audience. And then they added in some canned laughter on top. Because he's telling these stories very naturally, not like a man on a stage or in a studio, that is. So it seems like these are all actually live. There's some funny stuff in it. It's very countrified. There's a lot of stuff in there where he's using some terms that you're not going to hear in your typical stand-up album. He makes mistakes. Said, "Have my nose fixed. Now my mouth won't work." It doesn't make any sense, but it's cute and it's again very self-deprecating, and I appreciate that. It's fun to listen to. I would stick to side two, and if you're going to stick to one track, look up "Picking Up Pawpaws." It's very cute. It's not the tightest comedy in the world. It's a story. It's debate. This is called a comedy album, but it's a story album. And again, I the first thing I can think of is an Andy Griffith or maybe a Bill Cosby with less of the context. So something you can actually enjoy, specifically that "Picking Up Pawpaws." It's very cute. It's enjoyable, and I'm interested in knowing more about this guy. I don't know how much information there is about him out there, but, Wendy Bagwell, This, That, and the Other, 1970. Comedy album a day, if you would, hashtag it, comedy album a day. And that's about it. Listen to the Comedy on Vinyl podcast, please. I'm Jason Klom. Thanks so much for watching, and have a good thing. Hey, everybody. Jason Klom, host of the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. I am doing a comedy album a day for all of 2017, and this is number 4. Just so you know, I'm doing these little previews on Instagram so people know that they exist. But if you go to youtube.com/comedyonvinyl, you'll see everything. I'm doing around 6 or 7 minutes each. Well, whatever they come to. This one could take 3 hours. I don't know. Probably not. This is from 1968. This is a compilation. It is from a number of previous albums. This is Elsa Lanchester's Body Cockney Songs. I said Body Cockney because I'm a little inebriated. Body Cockney Songs. It's exactly what it says on the tin. This is all music hall stuff. Here's the thing about Elsa Lanchester. She might look a little familiar. If you don't know who she is, the first thing I knew her from as a kid was Mary Poppins. She's in Mary Poppins. But what you should probably know, because I went to film school, so I should probably know her better, as the Bride of Frankenstein. Now, the original Bride of Frankenstein. She did not reprise the role. But this is one of several albums that she did. And again, this is a re-release. Her first songs that she ever did, and again, they're kind of music hall style, are from the 20s. I don't know exactly how old all these were. And when I say I don't know, I researched trying to find some of them. And every time you look up some of these particular songs, you're just going to find Elsa Lanchester's name attached to it. They're a delight. And when you find out that some of these came out in albums first in the early 50s and do the math, she's in her mid-50s recording some of these. Again, she did a lot of them in her 20s, in the 20s as well. She's born in 1902, just for a little perspective. She's fascinating, and it's kind of great that she was doing some of these apparently in her 50s. And it's one thing if you're doing sort of a revival where these are the things I sang when I was a young person in music hall, which is, you know, the English version of vaudeville. It's one thing if you're doing this kind of revival or this nostalgia thing. She's doing this with pure, utter joy. The sort of spastic energy that you look at this cover. That is what it sounds like. There are not a lot of comedy albums that look what they sound like. I'm going to give you a few titles just so you know what's going on. If you can't tell, I mean, I don't care. I'd be doing this sober. I'd be laughing this much. Title one, Fiji Fanny. Fanny, if you're an American like myself, you might not be familiar. Fanny means vagina in England. There's At the Drive-In, which is not obvious, but let's see. Please Sell No More Drink to My Father. Not a dirty song. Actually, really sad. It's a very sad song, but also kind of reflects the atmosphere of British music hall stuff. When a Lady Has a Piazza. Piazza is code for something. Linda and her Londonderry Air. Londonderry Air. You got it. If You Peek in My Gazebo. Never Go Walking Without Your Hat Pin is a song about protecting yourself from assault, or at the very least, attempts at heavy petting. The Husband's Clock. And then Lola's Saucepan, which you might not guess, is a metaphor for losing one's virginity and having to explain yourself afterwards. This is just a lot of fun. It's not often that I listen to something that is not within my range of experience and say, hey, give it a shot. But I actually find it kind of delightful. I would love to meet somebody and have them on the podcast who grew up with this. That would be fantastic. But it's great. And she's, while she lived in America most of her life, actually, she's incredibly English. This is very English. You'll remember her from anything you've seen her in. Her accent is, she just seems just the epitome of the English performer. And like I said, she had a lot of, her history was in music hall, burlesque, et cetera, et cetera. If you read about her life, it's fascinating. One of the most fascinating things I read was that as a young film star, and if I'm not mistaken, it was a little bit before she became the Bride of Frankenstein, she was in three short films that were written, not just written by, but written specifically for her. Again, from what I've read, I would need to read a full autobiography of her, which exists, by H.G. Wells. That kind of blew my mind. So she was like this muse and inspiration for all these people. And also, again, the delight with which she sings these songs is the, I want to say is the only reason you'll forgive the ridiculous puns. It's a reason you enjoy the ridiculous puns and I said puns again, a little drunk. The non-subtle metaphors. So there's plenty of that to go around. You know, it's a full-length album. It might get a little tiresome if you're like, well, I got the point. You will get the point pretty soon into it, but it's fun. And there, like I said, there are a few particular ones on here that might ring a little more, I guess, just obvious, and therefore, you know, you want to get the point sooner, fine. Get in, get out. There we go. It's fun. It's a ton of fun. And there's another one of these. So there's probably a point here within my Comedy Album a Day series that we're going to cover her second one, which I also own. But again, both collections. She did albums before this in the 50s and again, released some 78s back in the 20s and 30s that were, you know, they were very, very same kind of thing. It's delightful. It's a lot of fun. She's very fascinating and makes me want to research her more, knowing only so little about her until today. But yeah, it's worth listening to. Elsa Lanchester's Body Cockney Songs is a ton of fun. I would recommend looking it up. For a lot of these, you can frankly just go to YouTube because, you know, she's not going to get the money. I can't probably recommend that you do that, but I'm just saying that you can get them on YouTube. Same as you can get this on YouTube, which you already are because nobody on Instagram is seeing this. So anyway, thank you guys very much for watching. Please listen to the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes. Rate us highly. That would be very helpful. You can also see all the other Stolen Dress Entertainment podcasts at stolendress.com. I'm on another podcast called Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour. We just released, a video showing that we created with the help of people in a position to know the smallest comedy album in history. It's 1.5 inches. I can actually show it to you. Called it Vinyl Dwarf. It's this. That's how small it is. This is my little display case. There's a little hole here for a very tiny bottle of scotch that I want to put in there. I had one, but I tried to put it in and I broke it. That is the smallest comedy album in history. And that's the kind of weird shit that you can listen to on the Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour podcast. But again, this is Comedy on Vinyl. So I hope you give that a shot. Give it a listen. We've had a lot of wonderful people on the podcast in the past, including Rachel Bloom of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, before she was on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, pretty sure we're responsible for all her success. But we also, there's a series here on YouTube where we talk to Phil Proctor of Firesign Theater. We're doing an oral history of, I was going to say a verbal, an oral history of Firesign Theater, one album at a time. And it's a ton of fun. Anyway, thank you guys for listening and watching. I'm Jason Klom. Have a good thing. Hey, everybody. Jason Klom here with the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. I'm doing a comedy album a day for all of 2017. This is a preview if you're watching it on Instagram. You can watch the full thing up on youtube.com/comedyonvinyl. If you spread the word about this, and I really would appreciate it if you did, hashtag comedy album a day. So, today, I picked Gene Shepard's The Declassified Gene Shepard. And the reason I picked this is, well, I bought it a long time ago, wanting to know a little bit more about Gene Shepard because, like most people my age, I know him from A Christmas Story. And his voice, anyway, and his writing. Very interesting guy, has a long, fascinating past. He was in the military, which is one of the reasons this is formatted, it's themed to his military service, and there's one of the big stories on here is about his military service, but very well known for being a DJ, radio personality, speaker, kind of a storyteller. I almost want to call him a stand-up based on the way he tells stories, and from what I read, Jerry Seinfeld would agree. Jerry Seinfeld has stated that Gene Shepard informed his sense of humor more than anybody else. And while you don't, if you listen to this, you wouldn't necessarily hear direct, obvious parallels. I think there is a way, the way he uses language, and not that Jerry Seinfeld is like a Carlin-esque playing with language type of comedian all that often, but it is the way he speaks is I don't know, there's just something, at least knowing that, it did flavor my listening of this album. It's a ton of fun. Gene Shepard is very funny. It's a very weird and uneven album in terms of format. Side one is all over the place, and it does feel like something that would be put out by a radio DJ or by a radio station who wanted to, you know, promote their DJ. I don't think that's the case. I think it is just was his sensibility. There's a lot of sort of funk music, occasional Dixieland music, interspersed with Man on the Street stuff, interspersed with some radio stuff and some live stuff, which was recorded, if I'm not mistaken, at Princeton. Yeah, Princeton University. So there's some stuff that clearly is from his radio show, or at the very least recorded to sound like it's from his radio show, and live stuff. And the interstitials, the live Man on the Street stuff, is all people, somebody asking, do you know who Gene Shepard is? And asking what they think of Gene Shepard, and it begins with people having no idea who he is, and then people having heard of him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and just evolves from there. And, yeah, the first side is insane, and it's a mix of things, and it's hard to kind of get a grasp on it, which is why the second half works so much better for me. Like, it's two sets of stories, and the second of those, so the last track on the whole thing, which is 14 minutes, is all about, him being in the military during World War II, and them watching a film about VD, and everybody wanting VD because it just involved, sexy times with a lady, not quite knowing what VD was and not knowing to ask the right questions. It's very funny. I enjoyed it a lot. It's not stand-up, but it is definitely comedy, because his stories are just great. It's just the way he... the way he forms dialogue and stuff, though, that sounded wrong. The way he writes dialogue and the way he then reads it is great. It's very super conversational. There's actually one story on here that if you do know A Christmas Story, you'll recognize immediately. And yeah, it's a ton of fun. Definitely worth listening to. I would seek it out. If you find it, buy it. It's probably not expensive. I'm kind of hoping, I'm recording each of these for my own personal archive as I go, because that's another goal for doing the Comedy Album a Day, besides listening to the stuff I've been meaning to listen to for such a long time. And I'm hoping at some point, maybe, you know, there would be a way, it's, rights are complicated, but if there's a way to get companies involved who produce these or still on the rights to basically let me put these out in some way or another, that would be a ton of fun. But in the meantime, I'm just listening to these and not doing any kind of a rating, but just giving an idea what the experience is like listening to it. So The Declassified Gene Shepard, it also says right there that people have a right to know. It's great. It's irreverent. It's fun. It's irreverent, and it's a guy who is living in the age of hippies. Seems like he might have a touch of hippie himself, but is a guy who clearly served in the military, has this very different perspective on the whole situation. And it's just very funny. I don't know. It's just just good storytelling, not boring storytelling, because that exists, and nothing, that's all a matter of taste, but to me, this is not boring. But the first half is really, it's so crazy and so disjointed, it took me a bit to get into it. But enjoy that. Please listen to the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. Once a week, I talk with different comedians about a great comedy album, something that they loved or something that's influential. We just had Stuart Goldsmith of the Comedians Comedians podcast. The Comedians Comedian podcast on the show, and we talked about a Not the 9 o'clock News album released by the BBC. That was a ton of fun. So yeah, follow us at Comedy on Vinyl on Twitter. We're / Comedy on Vinyl on Facebook. All very easy to find. And you can check out other podcasts that I work on and produce and am in at stolendress.com. Thank you guys so much. And as always, have a good thing. Hey, everybody. Jason Klom with the Comedy on Vinyl podcast, doing a comedy album a day in 2017. I'm hashtagging it Comedy Album a Day. Let's get right to it. If you guys are at all fans of Dr. Demento or novelty songs at all, you might be familiar with, for instance, the song Dead Puppies or Kinko the Clown. Those are by a group called Ogden Edsel, which you already know very likely if you know those songs anyway. The album I chose today, I do not have on vinyl, okay, but, what I listen to is not just a rip of this album, which, by the way, I have to read, because I can't memorize it, is Wahalia Blues Ensemble Mondo Bizarro Band, which does seem like it might be the full name of the band at one point, but I'll find out later, because at some point I'm going to be talking with members of the band on the podcast, the Comedy on Vinyl podcast, which you'll see, that's that, and a little bit of that. It is a comedy music album, but that doesn't really do it justice. It's also a sketch album. Some of them are, they're interstitials, but what I listened to today, I mentioned this before, taylorjessen.blogspot.com is where I got this. This is a cleaned up vinyl version. He cleaned it up. It's brilliant. And he cleaned up the cover and everything too. It's fantastic. And it's a lot of fun to listen to. If you are of a sensitive nature, maybe Kinko the Clown is not going to be for you. It is about a clown who has some unfortunate proclivities. And at the end of the day, it's not like it's pro that, but it's sensitive stuff. So if you don't want to listen to that kind of thing, you won't. Dead Puppies is obviously sensitive too. It's really great. Like, it's the music is incredibly eclectic. There's so much fun stuff on it. Clearly incredibly not only talented musicians, but talented sketch comedy people, because some of the interstitials are just fantastic. It's a ton of fun to listen to. It's definitely worth seeking out. You can find the album at Taylor's website, taylorjessen.blogspot.com. I didn't mention, it's originally from 1977. This cover that you're looking at here that I showed you is from 1979. This is a re-release in an LA label. I know all this because of Taylor's website. It's so much help. But Ogden Edsel is one of these groups that I feel like remains underappreciated for all of their work. Because there are, those two pieces that so many people are familiar with and are incredibly popular, especially in terms of Dr. Demento stuff in general. But it's worth listening to the whole album, especially if you already like it. And if you don't know Ogden Edsel at all, definitely worth listening to. They're originally from Omaha, Nebraska. They came out here to L.A. to do this, and they kept doing it. And we're very successful, especially in comedy circles. So that's a fun album. If you, I didn't mention this before, you can, there are little previews here on Instagram. You can follow us on Instagram. Anybody who's watching this, they already got cut off 2 minutes ago. But I hope you enjoy this. Please spread the word. Subscribe to the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. Give it a listen first if you haven't heard it. So give it a listen. Let me know what you think. And just tell people about it. Hashtag Comedy Album a Day. I'm Jason Klom. Thank you guys for watching. And as always, have a good thing. Everybody, Jason Klom with the Comedy on Vinyl podcast, doing a Comedy Album a Day here for 2017. This is 1972's Martin Mull. It's not called Martin Mull. Though that would be funny considering he was on Mary Hartman. So we're going to call this Martin Mull. Here's the thing. In looking at this, my assumption first was that, okay, Martin Mull, who I know well from Clue, I know well from Fernwood Tonight. I assumed, quite honestly, that the timeline was
Fernwood Tonight, Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman, all that stuff. And then this. I had no idea that Martin Mull started out as a songwriter. And so that was the interesting thing in doing the research, is finding out that he started out as a songwriter. He opened for people like Randy Newman, which is interesting because if you... oh, by the way, go to youtube.com/comedyonvinyl for the rest of this, because we're almost at the minute mark, my Instagram people. The interesting thing is, like, he sort of sounds, when he sings, quite a bit like Randy Newman, which I wasn't expecting at all, not in the least. His singing voice is completely unlike what I would expect. It actually is really, really, really wonderful. It's a gatefold album. It's got wonderful art. This art is fantastic. I really, really like it. And interesting thing, I tend to not really care about the quality of my albums when I buy them if I haven't found them elsewhere. I probably should have done it with this. It's got a really bad warp in it, which is, I'm not going to blame Martin Mull for it, or the album itself. I'm going to blame whoever gave this damn thing away. However, an interesting thing that I've never seen before in an album is this giant misprint. This is all cut off here because this happened. I'm sure it happens, but there must have been a ton of people who got these as well, because if one is off, you know, then it cuts in that weird way and pastes in that weird way. Must have been several that were the same way. Anyway, just an interesting thing. As far as the content of the album, some of these, I guess the expectation is that it is a comedy song album, which it's a funny song album. All the songs have, again, he is kind of doing a voice, in terms of his songwriting voice and his writing, it's all intended to be very funny. I've got a thing on my shirt. What is that? It's all intended to be funny, but it's subtle. It's not the fast-paced Weird Al kind of stuff that I'm used to and that I really like if I'm going to go for comedy music. It's a little on the sometimes slower side, both literally and not so literally, and a little more like a Randy Newman would be. He's a songwriter. I mean, he takes his time to get his point across. He takes his time to, like, hammer at a joke, to be honest. So in that way, it's not my style. I'm never going to say about any of these albums, don't listen to them unless it's just horribly, horribly racist or just not good or funny. This is fine. It's just not my style. I did enjoy a couple of things, though. Like, there are a couple songs that were really great. The first song on here is called Ventriloquist Love. And that's pretty obvious what it's about. In the very end, there's a song called Songwriter's Blues. And again, it's not hilarious, but it's, you know, it's contemplative and interesting. And in terms of the style, and, like, it's incredibly eclectic. And so that's worth listening to. It's worth listening to for that. But I don't know where it stands in the pantheon of comedy music, because when you hear people talk about comedy music, they don't talk about Martin Mull, because they don't need to. Martin Mull, in most of our eyes, I think, is in the acting camp. He's always been great in everything he's ever been in. So we all think of him as an actor or a comedian. I will be frank, I really assumed he was a stand-up first, and just realized that, oh, wow, I had zero idea. This was his thing. I didn't know what to expect with this album. I thought I might be getting a sketch album or a mix. So it was fun to learn that. And also, I decided I would pick his first one, since I have all of his albums except for two. And this is one of those situations where I didn't listen to it. There's so many. That's why I'm doing this. There's so many of my albums that I just haven't had a chance to listen to. So there's not going to be a lot of re-listening for the whole year. So there you go. 1972. Martin Mull, as I'm going to call it. I'm going to just do the full thing. I really like how that looks. But Martin Mull, 1972. This is Comedy on Vinyl. It's my podcast. Go check it out on iTunes. Give it a listen. Give it a high rating if you want to do that. Go to stolendress.com for all my other stuff, all my other podcasts, my movies. I just had a movie that came out on December 6th on DVD. Got another movie coming out later this year called Looking Forward 2016, which you can find at lookingforwardmovie.com. And you can follow me on Twitter if you want, at jklamm, J-K-L-A-M-M. Thank you guys for watching, and as always, have a good thing. How do you start talking about the beginning of modern comedy albums? Not easy. I'm Jason Klamm. I host a Comedy on Vinyl podcast. I just shifted in my seat. That was exciting. I'm doing a comedy album a day for all of 2017. You're going to see this preview here on Instagram, unless you're on youtube.com/comedyonvinyl, where you'll see the full thing. So I had my best friend, Dan Gomiller, who's also my co-host of the Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour podcast. Also, we've been doing sketch comedy together now for 24 years, since we were very little, but it counts. And I said, well, what do you want me to pick? And he said, give me a letter. So I gave him a letter. Three options were Fire Sign Theater, Red Fox, and something else. He said, why not Red Fox? And I actually realized I'm glad he picked that because that's what I wanted to listen to. Well, I didn't expect that when I grabbed Laugh at the Party Volume 2, that inside would be Laugh at the Party Volume 1. But that's what it is. From a totally different record label. It's not a different, it's from the it's a subsidiary of Dutone or Duto Records. Dootsie Williams was the guy who was a record producer, saw Red Fox in nightclubs in the 50s. It was probably, who knows, it could have been a week before these got recorded. I don't know the whole history of when these were recorded, but 1956. And yeah, this is his first album, and it's great. Well, here's the thing, your expectation when you hear Red Fox. If you know anything about his stand-up, or know how his stand-up is perceived, the assumption is it's going to be super dirty. And it's, at least by today's standards, I wouldn't call it dirty. It is bordering on cute. It is, he's very charming. Like, that's the thing. Like, you also associate him with Sanford and Son. Like, kind of latter-day Red Fox. Like, early Red Fox, first of all, doesn't sound a thing like that. He's just a young man who hasn't, you know, gone through years of smoke and possibly drink to get that amazing voice that he had. But you're also getting this guy who is just there to make the audience laugh. And that, it sounds like I'm kind of backing up on this this thing that I normally talk about on my podcast, where it's fine. Obviously, your goal, number one, is to make somebody laugh if you're a stand-up, if you're any kind of a comedian. But then you have to be responsible for your material. And I do agree that we talk about it a lot. But the funny thing is, there would be, I think, zero to apologize for, except for to a censor on this album, and barely to a censor. Actually, most of it is, like, very silly wordplay. It's very childish, and I don't mean that as an insult. It's, like, very, like, it's that's why these were party albums. Like, it's getting you in this, like, little kid spot where he just said a dirty word. He knows he said a dirty word. We all made an agreement that this means this one particular thing. And it's really funny. I mean, like, if, for instance, he's talking about a race, a horse race, and one of the names is Pussy Willow. One of the names is My Dick. It's like, I'm laughing thinking about it because it's so ridiculously silly. So the fascinating thing about this, the guy, again, Dootsie Williams, who produced this, recorded his big hit. One of his first big hits was Earth Angel. And what's interesting to me is that to be a guy who knows how to do stuff in a studio and then to go to recording in a club, when you listen to this album, it's clearly several different nights. Clearly, or at least seems to be several different locations. To the point where at the beginning of side two, there's a whole bit where Red Fox is, it sounds like there are three people in the room with him. And there might be. And they are eating it up. And it's delightful. Like, it's to the point where, like, I'm listening to it. I'm like, at no point, there are no groaners on it. You know, it's, but they're very simple, very silly. And like, you might be tempted, I guess, not to laugh. But once you're in the right state of mind, you see how party albums worked, why they worked. And the kind of, when people talk about, like I said, a stand-up's goal, number one, being to make people laugh. Like, that is all this is. And he's just testing waters and just going for it. And obviously he's been doing this for a long time because his timing and everything are magnificent. He's also got this weird delivery thing, which I didn't know he had. And I don't think I've heard too many people do. He does what I do when I speak, but he does this when he's performing, is he doesn't get to the point right away, or he'll like skip his own words. And it's so conversational sounding that it is more conversational than almost any comedian I've ever heard. It's to the point where I was like, and he does it, but then he does, and he'll skip thoughts the same way most people do, or at least the way I do as a nervous person. And I really love the way he tells stories. And I really appreciate his really dumb wordplay. It's ridiculous. I'm okay with really silly, dirty jokes that there's no point. There's no reason to not make them dirty too, though. I don't know. I really like it. It's just so much fun to listen to, and I'm very happy that it wasn't Volume 2. I got to hear the first thing that was released under his name. And you know, we have a record producer from LA to thank for you know, so many. If you go into discogs.com, just search Red Fox, double D, double X, or double cross, as he says on here. And you'll see Among albums, LPs, and singles, etc., 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 127 listings. They're actually very incomplete, and they're not in order, and I need somebody to please straighten it out. It's really driving me crazy. But he didn't do 127 albums, but he did a bunch of these, and they're very easy to get cheap, probably even the first one. I need to figure out what different label released his first one and how many different labels under Dutone and Duto released. I don't know. But I am fascinated with it, and I desperately want to hear more now. Especially knowing that while he could be filthy, and I know he could be exceptionally filthy in later years, I really like this very simple, gleeful, childlike humor that is also dirty. Anyway, that is Red Fox, Laugh of the Party, Volume 1. I actually don't know the color of it. The first Red Fox albums, all the Laugh of the Parties, were this art, which he drew, by the way. Says right there. Cover by Fox. They're all just different colors, different colorations of this particular art. And I don't know which one the first one is, so we'll pretend this is it, but it's not. Thank you guys for listening, or watching, actually. Thank you guys for watching. Check out the Comedy on Vinyl podcast, please. We've talked about most of these albums on the show. We're going to be talking about more. Got a good episode coming up this week, and I'm going to do this for all of 2017. That's about it. You can also check out the Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour podcast, danandjay.com. Dan Gomiller is my best friend of several years. At this point, I've lost count. I don't really care. We do a podcast together. That's it. Thank you guys again for watching. And as always, have a good thing. Hi, everybody. Jason Klom with the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. Just a little warning. I'm slightly inebriated for this one, too. I'm doing a comedy album a day for all of 2017. I am hashtagging it comedy album a day. I'm bumping into the tripod when I do it. And this time I am picking, yesterday we did Red Fox's first album, 1956. We're going ahead just 1 year to an album that is not really found heavily on anybody's resume and yet actually has a bit of an impact. By the way, you should go to youtube.com/comedyonvinyl if you're finding this on Instagram, because the full thing will be up there, because I probably won't be able to shut up for a few minutes. This album is 1957's Songs of Couch and Consultation by Katie Lee. Now, Katie Lee is a singer. It specifically says they're sung by Katie Lee, written and produced by Bud Freeman. Now, I looked it up. I'm not a music expert, but I do know that Bud Freeman is a jazz guy. I'm not so sure it's the same Bud Freeman. Discogs.com seems to say it's not. It's a different, it's a somebody Freeman with totally different first name. So somebody out there will correct me. And for one of the few times in my life, I'm happy to accept a correction to one of these things, because it actually does matter. I'd actually like to know, because it's impossible to find out online and it's not clearing it up. At the end of the day, I'm going to forget it when you give me the answer, but it doesn't matter. This is a very cool relic of the 50s, and I mean that in a kind way. A relic sounds like I'm saying it should be dismissed, but it shouldn't be. It's a lot of fun. This is actually one of the ones when I spoke to my buddy Taylor Jessen, Fireside Theater's archivist. This is one of the ones I just said, go through all my albums, pick them out, pick out the ones you think I should talk about. And this is one of those, tonight a friend picked this for me and told me I should listen to it. And I'm glad she did. It's, first of all, let's just go, I haven't talked too much about the album art on these. There's no sleeve or anything, so I don't know if there's ever a custom fun sleeve or anything. It's probably just a, hey, look at all the other albums on such and such records. I'm pretty sure it says here, Commentary Records here in, Los Angeles, California, Hollywood. 6381 Hollywood Boulevard. You guys should go there, tell me what's there, and, I guess I could do it myself, but I'm not going to. The art is really beautiful. This is a little, there's no ring wear, but there's a lot of, like you can see on mine, there's a lot of just garbage. I tend to shop in the 25-second, the 25-cent section sometimes, usually at Atomic Records here in Burbank, because I just want to find stuff. And if I'm not in the mood to buy the super high-quality version, I'm okay to get the 25-cent version first, see if I like it, and then go from there. And this is actually in okay shape, but regardless, the colors are really beautiful. She's just got, like, there's just, I don't know, it's just a very funny cover. Not the only cover you can find. From what I can tell, this is the first cover, but there are at least three different versions of Lady Guitar, Couch, And Sigmund Freud looking dude with glasses. Well, I say Sigmund Freud. He looks like a beatnik version of Sigmund Freud. And that's actually a good segue into what this album is, finally, 3 minutes into the damn thing. It's a music album. It's all music. The songs are satirical. I read somewhere parody, but there's no specific parody to the best of my knowledge. These are all satirical. They're fun, different styles. One of them is ragtime. Katie Lee was originally like Burl Ives called her the great cowboy singer. She was a country singer, folk singer. She still does that, actually. At 97, she's still doing all kinds of amazing, crazy stuff. But this album is all, as you can tell, it's about psychology. And I just hit myself with the album. I'm so excited. Because in 1957, psychology, the psychology people were more aware of was pop psychology. Pop psychology really meant something at the time. Sigmund Freud's teachings were, you know, only 40, 50, maybe 60 years old at this point. So they're still pretty fresh, you know, and I mean, consider that's now 50, 60 years ago. They're still fairly fresh in our minds, and the idea of applying a label to somebody or trying to explain things or, et cetera, it became very fun to make fun of that by saying, well, if you explain something, aren't you kind of explaining it away? By parodying, psychoanalysis in general, you're having fun with it as a fad, which it was. And it has now become more of a way of life for some people and is very helpful. But I don't find it dismissive. I find it just a reaction to, holy crap, this is just a sudden new thing in culture that just seems so funny because suddenly everybody's got a term for everything. And that was kind of mind-blowing. And eventually that actually became the same reaction that people had to political correctness, etc. And it's a very helpful thing that people reacted to in a way because it was just new and something they didn't understand. And we're just having fun with, making fun of, sure, but not necessarily crapping on. And, eventually it's interesting how these things snowball because now, I remember reading an old Mad magazine that had jokes about political correctness that were there and they were satire and they were goofy enough, but now it's exploded. You're being censored suddenly if you're asked to be politically correct. It's a similar situation here, and I'm not sure how. That's not true. It's a similar situation here in that it was something that was, again, a piece of culture that people didn't entirely understand and became turned into a piece of pop culture in order to explain it or understand it or, you know, make fun of it because of its prevalence. And, eventually it snowballs, becomes part of culture. And at this point, if you make fun of psychoanalysis, you feel like you're in the 50s. People still do it, I guess. We got to analyze this and analyze that. Everybody's two favorite films of all time. Let's get back to the damn album. It's just, there's so much to uncover when you're talking about this, to sort of explain why this was unique. Just give you some titles. Well, I'll just give you all the titles. We got Shrinker Man, The Will to Fail, The Guilty Rag, Stay as Sick as You Are, Hush Little Sibling, Real Sick Sounds, Repressed Hostility Blues, I can't Get Adjusted to the You Who Got Adjusted to Me, Schizophrenic Moon, Properly Loved, Gunslinger, A Ballad for Adult Westerns, It Must Be Something Psychological. These are things that I feel like in pieces you've probably gotten over the years, at no point would you have necessarily seen somebody do a theme album, other than this, of psychoanalysis related songs. And it is unique. It's actually a lot of fun. She's got an amazing voice. They're very well written songs. And even if you miss one or two while you're maybe researching the life of Katie Lee, you still enjoy it thoroughly. So there might be one or two songs that I didn't entirely process. But that said, this is fun and 100% re-listenable. I would re-listen to it. It's not something I can say of every vinyl comedy album I get to listen to because sometimes it's just a relic for the sake of it. This is fun. It's good stuff. And actually, if you look on the back, if you get a copy of this on vinyl, which I recommend, and like I said, I think I got this for 25 cents, there are some fun notes on the back as to the supposed origin of this, as written by, one assumes, Bud Freeman. It's not signed Bud Freeman, and again, probably not the Bud Freeman you assume. This is a fun album. So thank you, Taylor, for suggesting it. Thank you to my other friend for confirming that this should be the one that I listen to today. And also, Katie Lee, you're still around. This is an absolute open invite to come on the Comedy on Vinyl podcast, which is a podcast, which is not a word, a podcast everybody should listen to, subscribe to, rate highly if you enjoy it, and I hope you do. Click subscribe wherever that happens, because I am so unused to where that goes. Click subscribe here on YouTube, because I'm going to do this the whole year, all of 2017. 365 of these albums, which won't get me through my whole collection, but it'll get me close. Maybe I'll double up here and there. Maybe the podcast itself will actually cover the remainder. That's about it. Again, hashtag it, Comedy Album a Day. I'm Jason Klom. Please listen to the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. Look into the other stuff on stolendress.com. Thanks so much, and as always, have a good thing. Hi, everybody. I'm Jason Klom. I'm a host of the Comedy on Vinyl podcast for all of 2017. I'm listening to a comedy album a day to get through my collection. If you're watching this on Instagram, the full video is on youtube.com/comedyonvinyl, because I tend to ramble. I decided today to pick an album that I actually assumed I'd heard most of. Luckily, I hadn't. It is 1953's Songs by Tom Lehrer. This is Tom Lehrer's debut album. This is, to the best of my knowledge, you know, from the original release. It's so fantastic on the back. It even says that copies of this record are available at most record stores or at $3.98 each, plus 20 cents for mailing, from Tom Lehrer, Box 121, Cambridge 38, Massachusetts. And that's fantastic. Everybody has said everything it's possible to say about Tom Lehrer. There's nothing else for me to say, so I'm going to anyway. The songs that I do know on here, it was a delight to listen to. The songs I hadn't heard before are just so just peppy and quick and delightful and funny and subversive. There is this, I love that you have descriptions on the back of every single song, okay, to kind of prepare you for what you're about to listen to, if you're into that kind of thing. I am. The attitude with which they're written, which you can be fairly certain they were actually written by Tom Lehrer himself, they're so very, I'm trying to come up with the right word for them. But there's a biting satire in each of them while also defining what you're about to listen to. I mean, here, I'll give you an idea. There's a song called I Want to Go Back to Dixie. This is 1953, remember. That song either came out in 52 or 53. All these songs were from 52 and 53 and compiled in this album. He describes it, here we have a typical Dixie song, all about the many delightful features of the South. That's all it says. If you know his style, you can assume where this might go. It's a little bit judgmental of the nostalgia for things that don't exactly have a lot to back that nostalgia up. A lot of perspective in these songs and in the descriptions of the songs as well. There's so much common sense in what you're reading here. Which is he as any good satirist. The point of view on the back of this and the point of view on the music is that of, it's clearly this way. Why don't you see it this way? And if you already do see it this way, please enjoy this song that is equally judgmental of all the idiots out there. It's very just, please be smart. That is what the best satire in the world is, just asking you to please be smart about things. And this is so, I don't know, it's very ahead of its time in terms of the approach to this kind of satire. Especially since he's using styles that everybody's very familiar with, and the expectation is that it's just going to be cute. Each of them starts out as cute and has a turn, and that's what good comedy is. But at the time, that's what put him in the category of sick comics. Although I don't know that people considered him a comic, I think he might have been able to get away with more because he was a musician. He did comedy music, but at the same time, he's a musician first, right? He's not a stand-up. He's not there to just stand there and offend you, because that's the assumption people had about guys like Lenny Bruce, who didn't like the term sick comics, understandably, because it's very generalizing. It's like alt comedy or alternative music in the 90s. It means almost nothing. It's just a way for journalists to have a shorthand. And Tom Lehrer would definitely fall into that same kind of group in terms of the things he's... I mean, he literally has a song called I Hold Your Hand in Mine, that gets as literal as possible, and it turns out the man's a murderer. I won't give up, the reveals of all these songs, but that's the kind of thing you're getting here. That's typical of Tom Lehrer, but that's also what you really, really want. This album is incredible. Like, I'm going to say delightful again. It's delightful. There's a fake biography on the back of Tom Lehrer, it was just so much fun to listen to. And also, with these albums, as old as this one is, it's only 25 minutes long. It's quick. You get through it very quick. I had wondered why it felt fast because it's him, but it also seemed ridiculously fast. And I was right. Yeah, it was a 25 minute album. I think we'll probably end up burning through all of his albums because I have all but maybe one of them sitting there. I'm staring at them. I love the album art. I really do. It's really great. It's a full experience. There's album art, really great stuff on the back, and a very quick album. That is what you want from good comedy. Yeah, that's it. I know this is a fast one, but there's, again, people have said all there is to say about Tom Lehrer. All I can tell you is how I experience it, and I do think it's still a delight, and most of it still holds up. That is it. Subscribe to Comedy on Vinyl on iTunes. Rate us highly if you would. You can subscribe elsewhere too. We're on all the other apps that you can find podcasts at. Stolendress.com is the website of our of my podcast network where you can find my other shows. Follow us on Twitter at Comedy on Vinyl. And if you share this, hashtag it Comedy Album a Day, because I want people to know about what I'm doing. And then maybe eventually I can clear out some of the dead weight. This will not be the dead weight. This is staying in the collection. But thank you guys for watching. And as always, have a good thing.
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune into the new Stand Up channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast.